Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, class, and welcome back to Pop Culture University, the university where you learn everything that is going on in the world of pop culture and see what life lessons you can get from it for your own life based on what these celebrities are going through. Doesn't that sound amazing? Educational, inspirational. What could make it better? Having the sexiest podcast host in the whole world. People actually just named me the sexiest man alive. Don't fact check that. Just believe it. You may know me as Patty Pop Culture from TikTok. Real name, Patty Emminger. If it's your first time here, thank you so much for coming. Take a seat in the classroom wherever you would like. You are so welcome. Everyone is welcome here, even the furries, even the Selena fans and the Haley fans. We don't discriminate, and that's like the main way to discriminate these days. We don't even discriminate against that. If it is not your first time here, thank you so much for coming back. I love you. I stan you. I'm in your fandom. You already know that. You guys, there's so much crazy motherfucking tea today. This episode is going to be lit. Insane. You're really in for a treat. I think there's so much tea in today's episode that this should be considered an AP course. And you guys are going to have maybe a doctorate after this episode. We're going to talk about why Mila Kunis and Ashton Kutcher hate their children. And I mean that with my full chest. They hate their children. Then we're going to talk about multiple celebrities getting plastic surgery that you wouldn't maybe expect them to get. And how their fans are hating on them for it. Really doing some horrible shaming to them and how they responded to it in a kind of problematic but also kind of amazing clapback way. We need to talk about how Jennifer Aniston is complaining about Gen Z again and saying that they have now ruined comedy in addition to other things that they have ruined. She's the OG Karen. And then lastly, we need to talk about Fat Amy. We're finally going to do a little segment on Rebel Wilson and talk about her whole journey of being a late bloomer and not being allowed to lose weight even though she really wanted to because of evil Hollywood. So much fucking tea. Can't wait to get into all of it. Make sure you rate this podcast 5 stars, Spotify, Apple Podcasts before we get into it. You're already here. You may as well do so. It helps me out so much. Leave a cute little review. I love reading them. Screenshot yourself listening to it. Post it to your Instagram story and tag me. And I will see it at the top of my feed. I'll hit you up. We can be besties. And without further ado, class, take your seats. Eyes facing the front. Welcome to Pop Culture University. Class is in session. Y'all, I really do love my class, like spending time with y'all, talking about all the pop culture. I was looking forward to this all day. I was giddy, like especially preparing the episode, what we're going to talk about. I was like, ooh, I can't wait to talk to them about this. And then DM people after, see what they have to say, see how they like it. And I know even if you don't DM me, you're just very receptive to it and love the episodes and I feel the love back. So I just love talking to each and every one of you. Literally you right now hearing me say this, I love talking to you. So thank you so much for tuning in. But you guys, someone who doesn't love someone else is Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis don't love their kids. And we were rooting for them. We were all rooting for this Hollywood couple. Aren't they lucky, this Hollywood couple? We loved them in That 70s Show. We wanted them to get married from the first time we saw 19-year-old Ashton Kutcher kiss 15-year-old Mila Kunis. We wanted it ever since that day. But someone needs to call CPS, Child Protective Services, because I swear they are just blatantly torturing their children. Mila Kunis's role in Bad Moms was so fulfilling and accurate. She probably walked into that audition room, told them how she is as a parent, and they were like, oh, you're getting the lead role in this film, babe. And she was like, cha-ching. So first, Mila and Ashton Kutcher, as we already know, they don't bathe their children. We've heard them say that before. They were literally talking about parenting on some podcast or talk show. And they were talking about their weird parenting style. And they said they do not bathe their children when they were like super young, like below 3. They would only bathe them if they saw dirt on them. I mean, if that's not dismissive parenting, if that's not neglectful, that is so scary. You realize how dirty one has to get to see dirt on yourself. Even the dirt under your fingernails takes a few days to pile up. Did they have to drop them in mud like pigs and roll around in the mud before they clean them? Those poor children. They're going to get bullied at school for how much they smell, and they're going to get diseases. But I guess they're all about that organic LA life. I don't get it. I will be bathing my kids because I think that's just the right thing to do. And I think they'll look back and say, hey, thanks for bathing me as a child. And I'll say, you're welcome. Secondly, what they said this week that absolutely infuriated me for some reason, I'm actually mad, is that they will not ever give their kids any money, financially support them, or give them an inheritance when they're older. They have two kids, Dimitri and Wyatt, one girl, one boy. They're 8 and 6 years old. And I'm sure they would love a nice fat check after their parents kick the bucket or just some support going into their careers, their creative endeavors, college. I think they would just love not to be in a chokehold by capitalism like the rest of us, literally strangling us every day by Uncle Sam's bare, thick hands around our throats. Now, Mila and Ashton have a really high net worth. I didn't even know it was this big. Those residual checks from That 70s Show must be hitting. They have a combined net worth of $275 million, and apparently their kids will see none of that. They really said, man, fuck them kids and fuck you too, to their own offspring. I mean, why even have a kid, am I right? We'll get into that more about why I think this is so morally wrong. But their reasoning is that both Mila and Ashton grew up in lower middle class homes, so they understand the value of money and the struggle that comes along with that. Ashton said this week, quote, my kids are living a really privileged life and they don't even know it. And they'll never know it because this is the only life that they'll know. I'm not setting up a trust for them. We'll end up giving our money away to charity and to various things. According to Ashton Kutcher, if his kids don't have a trust fund, it would motivate them to work hard and not expect things to be handed to them on a silver platter. Mila said, we are very aware of what a dollar's worth is because it's 100% earned by us, for us. Mila continued, nothing has been handed to us, and our kids won't know what that's like. On one side, it's beautiful. They'll never know what it's like to have ketchup soup for dinner. But on the other side, they'll never know how to appreciate things. So it's a matter of teaching them from a very early age that, quote, mommy and daddy may have money, but you are poor. Oh my God. Oh my God. Do they call their children it too? God damn. These kids are going to turn out like the Menendez brothers. They're going to think, maybe the Menendez brothers were onto something. If you don't know, the Menendez brothers killed their parents with shotguns to get their inheritance. They're really hot, though. The Menendez brothers, they're hot. So it's okay. Just don't do it again. Teehee. And it's a real hard knock life for the Kutcher kids because their parents don't even like to give them gifts. Like, do they even say, I love you? Fuck. Do they tuck them into bed or body slam them into bed at night? So apparently they don't even like to give them gifts. It was widely reported that Mila Kunis and Ashton Kutcher do not allow people to give their kids gifts. But in an interview on Jimmy Kimmel, Mila Kunis told guest host Shaquille O'Neal that people heard about their one gift policy. So apparently they only get one gift from strangers. And Mila clarified and said, I'm not anti-gifts. I just don't over-gift my child. She feels like too many gifts would lead to ingratitude and make the kid expect more and more. She continued, they get so many wonderful gifts from my family and my husband's family that he and I give her literally one present. My son, who's 11 months old, he doesn't get any presents. He gets boob and he's fine. I think she means like he just gets breastfed. He gets the privilege of living another day. That is the gift we give him and that is all we're going to give them. Like, damn, can their kids have drinking water or clothes that fit them? It's really a hard knock life for them. Instead of treated, they get tricked. Instead of kisses, they get kicked. It's a hard knock life. Santa Claus, we never see. Santa Claus, what's that? Who's he? No one cares for you a bit. When you're Ashton Kutcher's kid, it's a hard knock life. So while I can appreciate them wanting to teach their kids the value of a dollar and trying, like they think they're doing something good here, I think they're absolutely so evil. Give your kids some money. Give maybe $200 million to charity. You know, die with a good conscience. Hopefully you'll get into heaven, blah, 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 blah. But give at least $75 million to your damn kids. Like, I get they want their kids to work hard, but it seems like even Ashton and Mila have forgotten the value of a dollar. They're so used to having so much money at this point and not having to worry and just living in their nice house in California that they forgot how hard the struggle of not having it is. Like, do they really realize what they're signing their kids up for? They have this golden ticket out of the rat race of capitalism and like poverty, and they're not going to use it. That to me screams of ungratefulness and forgetting the value of a dollar. Like you shouldn't really forget the value that you have in having all those dollars. And I do believe in giving a lot of your money to charity, especially if you are that rich, that's amazing. But you need to just responsibly feel so grateful in the evil capitalist society that we live in that you are in the higher tax bracket, because that is so rare to come about. Like, they really just forget how rare and astronomical the odds were of them both becoming so rich and so fortunate in this world where most people live below the poverty line. Give that all away and make your kids start from scratch. How dare you? Build some generational wealth. Give your kids the life that you didn't have. That's what everyone wants. That's the American dream. Capitalism is evil in some ways, but it definitely leads to ambition and the ability to have a really amazing, easy life if you are lucky enough to make the money to do so. And the fact that they're taking that away from their kids, it just seems like they have almost lost their ability to appreciate their own money. They're scared their kids will be affluent, but they're, to me, showing affluenza right now. And if they give all of this away and make their kids suffer, that would just be insane. Like, let them have a happy, stress-free life. I feel like there's more to life than working for your money and knowing the value of a dollar and really grinding and putting in the elbow grease and the hard work. Ashton and Mila, to me, are giving Stockholm syndrome to capitalism. They're more loyal to the economic system in our country of being so used to working your whole life and having your whole day revolve around making money and knowing the value of a dollar, that they're more loyal to that lifestyle than they are to their own kids. Like, it's like they went through the lower middle class life, so they want their kids to potentially have to go through that as well. My kids, if I was rich, oh shit, I'm building generational wealth. I am making us become the Rockefellers. We're being bougie. We're being stuck up. My kids will be iced out. Every piece of Disney merch that they want, they'll walk into school with a designer mini purse from Gucci. They see it. They like it. They want it. They got it. That would be their motto. I would be spoiling them like the Kardashians, because I just know how rare a lifestyle like that is. And I think you should really shower your kids with gifts if you can, because being happy is more important than needing to know how to struggle for money. That is just my thoughts on that. And they can still teach them the value of a dollar, educate them. Like, how about you raise intelligent kids and be more afraid that your kids will be like stupid rather than affluent? Do you know what I'm saying? Just there's a better way to go about this. So I think what we can learn from this is that there's more to life than struggling for money. There's more to life than working your job. There's more to life than making, like, setting up every like outline and itinerary in your life around getting the dollar, getting the bread, like moving across the country to make more money. Just don't set up your whole life around the money, your job, and the work part of the work-life balance. There's more to it than that. Life, that's like secondary. Your first priority in life should be being happy. Even if that means spending a bunch of your money to go do something you want or invest in something you want. The money will always come back. Don't be afraid of that. It will come back. More will come back if you're doing things that make you happy. I promise. So just don't be a slave to the dollar your whole life. Try to build your own happiness and focus more on happiness than money, for sure. I don't need a cure for love. I'm moving on. Getting too much, didn't get enough. Sick but not broken hearted. Tonight, I don't need a cure for love. Yeah, I'm alive. Getting too much, didn't get enough. Sick but I'm getting started. Tonight, I don't need a cure for love. Sick but not broken hearted. Now I know where my heart is. Don't need someone to start it. No. You guys, I'm so bored with my dating life. I'm really bored. Can I confide in you for a second? Professor Patty is bored because the only people I'm talking to are like two people who live multiple states away. If that's not the gay experience, I don't know what is. The gay experience is exclusively talking to people and having a whole roster of many guys who live all around America, because anyone within a 50-mile radius is just not hot, is just not normal or interesting. So you literally have to really cast that net real fucking far, all the way out to the Pacific in my case. And I'm bored. Remember last episode where I was saying I want a crush? There's this one guy in my Hinge. He just matched with me and I'm already obsessed with him. We haven't spoken at all. Well, he said hi and I said hey. So normally I've fallen in love with him now. He's so perfectly my type. He looks like my type. His job is my type. He said all the foods he eats are my favorite foods. Wait, let me go read the foods that he likes. Oh my God, I hope he responds to me. If he doesn't respond to me, I'll literally be so upset. Like, I'm already planning our lives together. I'm already stalking him on the internet. I'm not gonna say his name. His favorite foods are sweet potato fries, pizza, sushi, and breakfast food. Like, he's so perfect, right? Sweet potato fries and sushi, I could eat. Oh my God, wait, you can get sweet potato sushi. I'm gonna suggest that for our first date. But he is my type and that's what I was praying to God for, and he delivered. So this man better not leave me undelivered, because I'm bored with my love life and he could really spark something up in me and give me a reason to live again. Maybe if he doesn't respond, I'll get some plastic surgery like we're about to talk about. So Doja Cat just got plastic surgery. Doesn't that surprise you? I feel like Doja Cat is the essence of confidence and almost like showing off her natural jiggle and her natural thighs. What's that Beyonce lyric about? This might be your chance. Something about like just how rare it is to see a fully like natural ass, and this might be your chance. I said left cheek, right cheek, drop a low, then swing. Texas up in this thing. Gang, 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 gang. If you jump to put jeans on, baby, you don't feel my pain. Hold up. So apparently Doja Cat is sick of having to jump to put on her jeans because she got liposuction in her thighs. Oh my God, in her thighs. I've never heard of someone wanting to make their thighs exclusively smaller. And that makes me wonder, like, with this whole Ozempic craze and the skinniness being back in, is Doja Cat trying to adhere to that and be a part of that trend? That makes me worried because people were so infatuated with her naturally, like, moderately curvy body. She didn't, like, have any crazy proportions. But people just liked that she was really confident in her jiggle and her thick thighs and just all of that. And they were really mesmerized by her body. So it's like, why would she change it? So she's getting liposuction in her thighs and her boobs. She's getting a breast reduction, which I'm pretty sure leaves a scar under your breast. One of my friends got that. And Nicki Minaj was talking about how she wants a breast reduction, but she doesn't want the scar on the lower part of her boob. I mean, to each their own. But I guess Doja Cat was down to get it. It sounds like she just wants to be smaller in general, I guess. She wants to be Doja Kitty. So she told the whole world on her Twitter, as she does, about everything going on in her life. She could get a wart inside her vagina and we would be the first to know in her Twitter, and that's why we love her. But she told everyone that, quote, she's getting her she got her titties done and her clit bedazzled. I heard about getting your clit bedazzled. It's called getting vajazzled. I want it so bad. I'm saving for that right now. I'm on sugardaddy.com for that right now, because I just need to compete with those vajazzled hoes. But so I don't think she actually got her clit bedazzled, but that'd be fun. but she definitely got her titties done and her thighs done. And a lot of fans were like very happy for her. She was telling everyone about her recovery updates and that she wasn't in that much pain. So that's good. She says that she's just numb and swollen as fuck under her arms. And she'll show us the results soon when her arms don't look like two loaves of bread from the swelling. She said, give it 3 more weeks. She seems very happy with her results, though. She said, I could suck my own damn titties. That's how good they look right now. Goddamn. No, I feel the same way about my own titties. I look at them in the mirror and I'm like, ow. The chest days be paying off. The suspicious supplements from the back room at GNC are paying off. I love her transparency, though. I really love that, even though it was very blunt. Loves it. She's always honest. Even when she had really bad acne a few years ago, she was always telling us about her acne struggles. I love when celebrities are honest about their acne. We act like they're like the Navy SEALs of America. But when we have acne, we just get bullied raw in the streets. We don't get any pat on the back. It's a just shame. Like when Kris Jenner was teasing Kendall Jenner's massive announcement on Ellen DeGeneres' show, and we all thought it was going to be Kendall revealing that she likes to munchbox, that she likes to scissor, that she is a lesbian, in fact. But actually, it was just that she's having acne problems. So lame. Now, some fans were not happy about her plastic surgery, and they were actually really going at her so hard because it's like, Doja Cat, I feel like, is someone that represents a natural body. So I think this took a lot of fans by a big shock. So a few fans said, stop encouraging your young and impressionable fans to change their bodies. That's what someone tweeted. As if Doja Cat is saying, go out and get plastic surgery yourself, babe. Copy every single thing I do. And if we all copied every single thing Doja Cat did, we would have no eyebrows. We would be bald. We would be in the Illuminati. We would be covering ourselves with 20,000 red crystals and in strange chat rooms on Omegle with white supremacists. So clearly we're not going to copy everything Doja Cat does. And to anyone who thinks we should copy anything a celebrity does, you're so wrong. So fucking wrong. So Doja Cat's response was, eat my long, quiet, warm farts. Couldn't have said it better myself. So poetic, her response. But that's really all you have to say to some people who are just so like oblivious to common sense, and they're so just far gone and withdrawn in the land of delusion. You can't even give them a serious response when they say something so dumb like, you're encouraging all your fans to get plastic surgery. No, she's not. So that's the perfect response to people like that. Someone else like continued kind of harassing Doja and said, she's so easy to trigger, it's hilarious. Saying that she got triggered by being criticized for plastic surgery. And Doja Cat responded and said, I know, stop, please. I'm literally on bed rest. Y'all are going to get blocked over one bad joke. Oh my God, I feel that so much. If someone's in my comment section or on any app and they say one stupid thing, I don't care if they love my content, they look forward to it every day. If you say one disrespectful thing in my comment section, I don't care if I lose a follower, you're blocked forever. So I don't know if you guys have noticed, but lately I've been putting comments in my comment section that said, if you say this, you will be immediately blocked. So make sure it's worth it because you'll never see my content again. And it works. And then no one really says those things. So that's how you guys can handle haters in your life if you want to comment things like that. And overall, I think that we should encourage young people to do whatever they want with their bodies, including plastic surgery. That's the real body positive message here that I think Doja is spreading. What did Hailee Steinfeld say in that one song, Most Girls? Yes, yeah, some days you feel so good in your own skin, but it's okay if you want to change the body that you came in. Because you look greatest when you feel like a damn queen. She's so right. Hailee Steinfeld is such a fucking lyrical genius. And she's the oracle that we need today. So I'd say if you want to get plastic surgery, get it. Who gives a shit? Lay on the operating table for hours, days. Let the surgeons play operation on you. Literally throw you around like a rag doll. Give you the body that you want. Go in looking like Sweet Sally Peaches next door and come out looking like a dominatrix blow up Bratz doll cock destroyer. Who cares? I don't get why in 2023 people are still so mad at plastic surgery. I listened to this one podcast about plastic surgery and they say the rates are just going up and up and up every single year. So I think it's going to be very, very normalized in society, even for middle class people to afford plastic surgery. I've even got like a cosmetic procedure done of PRP, getting shit injected into my head to make my hair regrow. That's completely cosmetic. So I feel like it's just going to become more and more normal. And you know what? I do know why people hate plastic surgery. They're mad because you are doing something to make yourself look better or feel happier in general. And the people who are hating don't have the guts, don't have the confidence, self-assuredness, self-awareness, or the money that you do to get it done. And those people who will make fun of you for getting plastic surgery are the same ones who will bully you for being 5 pounds overweight, having a flat ass, or a round face. And now they're mad that you'll have pretty privilege and they can't make fun of you anymore, or they're mad that you are just doing something that makes you happy. And I don't get why there's such a natural beauty cult still in America. Like, why do we praise someone more for being attractive if it's natural over plastic? I think that's so fucked up because those people with natural beauty, like if you think about it, we praise them because the human eye likes attractive things and we're more drawn to them. That's just a fact. But they didn't like do anything to deserve it. They're not gods. They just kind of like won some sort of genetic lottery where all of their features combined work out in a way for them that they look very good. And they now have pretty privilege and are attractive. But like I said, they didn't really do anything to deserve it. They're not special. They're not like the chosen ones. So I guess I'm saying, why are we praising them, but not someone who gets plastic surgery? We should just, you know, if we're going to praise people based on their level of attractiveness, shouldn't we just praise people who have artificial attractiveness and natural attractiveness the same exact way? That's what I think. I don't get like why we think if two people look the exact same, but one didn't get plastic surgery, the one who doesn't have plastic surgery is better. I don't understand. So yeah. It can get me so mad. But Khloe Kardashian also got some hate for her plastic surgery this week. Someone dared to comment on her Instagram post saying, "Do you miss your old face?" Oh my God. So fucking insane. That's a question that Ellen DeGeneres would ask on her show, though. She was so blunt and crazy. She'd be like, "So do you miss your old face?" But anyway, Khloe responded and she said, "No." Purr. I don't miss my old face, bitch. That's why I got the work done. And you're not going to shame me into trying to be regretful or trying to make me have an epiphany that me getting plastic surgery was crazy and live in some, like regret or try to make me feel ashamed. So stupid. Khloe's been very open about her nose job, and I'm very happy that she's been open about her nose job so people can be empowered by that. Obviously, she's not open about a lot of other things like her obvious butt enhancement or Ozempic or body, you know, sculpting, whatever. The Kardashians do a lot of toxic things with their plastic surgery, but I'm happy she was open about her nose, and I'm happy that we can just forward this conversation about plastic surgery. So I think what we can learn from this is that your body is your body. Do whatever you want with it. Don't let anyone shame you, try to tamper with your mental state, tamper with your decision-making. Make the decision for you. Never let someone shame you out of doing something that you want, especially when it comes to plastic surgery, because I think there are a lot of positives to it. And the real person who's going to have to live with the results of the surgery forever are you. So all I would say is make sure you're in, you know, a good mental state when you do it. Think it through for months and months and months or years. Just be very sure that you want it and know that your intentions are just to do it for yourself. And once you are very clear on your intentions and you're very confident and you are sure that you want it, I don't think there has to be an ounce of shame that is felt when getting plastic surgery. And I want everyone to know that. So first, Jennifer Aniston hates Gen Z because she thinks they're ruining the concept of celebrity and being famous. I talked about that in a different episode. Now Jennifer Aniston hates Gen Z because she thinks they're ruining comedy. Jen wants to genocide Gen Z. Genocide with a J-E-N. She's literally a Karen. That haircut she had called the Rachel, that was just AKA the Karen training wheels haircut. Because I feel like Jennifer Aniston is a Karen. And I do like some of her work, but I don't think she should be saying all this. She's becoming more and more unlikable in a world where you need to be liked by Gen Z. I'm just saying, she's getting a little ridiculous out here. But now, she is specifically upset because she thinks her hit sitcom, Friends, that I'm sure you all know, has unfairly become deemed as offensive by viewers of the show today when we go back and watch it. And she seems frustrated that her show, probably one of the most popular shows of all time, Friends, is now deemed as offensive. Do you guys think Friends is deemed as offensive? What are your thoughts on Friends? Do you watch it every day? I feel like everyone kind of just watches Friends in the background when they do things. That's kind of just a part of the American experience. At this point, Friends is playing on a TV somewhere around you and you don't really have a choice. Oh my God, there was like a Friends pop-up in Chicago. I live in Chicago and they like remade all the sets, like the coffee shop and stuff. And I went, not because I watched the show, just because it's so ingrained in our culture. So this is what Jennifer Aniston had to say about Friends being offensive. So she said, nowadays it's a little tricky because you have to be very careful, which makes it really hard for comedians like herself. Because the beauty of comedy is that we make fun of ourselves. We make fun of life. And in the past, like on her show, you can make a joke about a bigot and have a laugh. That was hysterical. And it was about educating people on how ridiculous people were. And now we're not allowed to do that. There's a whole generation of people, kids, who are now going back to episodes of Friends and they find them offensive. There were things that were never intentional and others, well, we should have thought it through. But I don't think there was a sensitivity like there is now. And I guess that makes her upset. Because she continued and said, everybody needs funny. The world needs humor. We can't take ourselves too seriously, especially in the United States. Everybody is far too divided. Now, she seemed to be defending Friends there for a second against how problematic it truly is when she said, we're making jokes about bigots as if the characters weren't being bigots themselves. Like, they very clearly weren't making fun of the bigots. They were being the bigots on the show. And it wasn't in a satirical sense. Like, their characters were seriously being discriminatory against certain groups. And then when she says, there were things that were never intentional and others, well, we should have thought that through. She definitely realizes that Friends was for sure problematic. So I want to beg the question, is Friends so problematic that Gen Z should never watch it again? Is Friends too offensive to ever watch in 2023? Should we cancel Friends and never watch it again? That's what I want the question right now to be, because there are a few TV shows and movies or whatever that Gen Z has called to never watch again. What's that one Christmas film? Oh my God, I forgot. It's the one with like the leg lamp. I don't know, but that's an example of like a show that, or a movie that Gen Z never wants to watch again. So should Friends end up being one of those shows that we just never watch again? Before I get into all the problematic things that Friends has said, because I'm going to list them all and they're going to shock you, I want to say I've always had a bad taste in my mouth when it comes to Friends. I never really enjoyed watching it too much. I could watch it, you know, casually with a group or with friends if we were just watching it, but I would never turn on Friends by myself because I never really found it funny. Like, of course I laughed and I found it a bit funny, but you know what I'm saying? It overall, there was a little bit too much cringe and problematicness that I just did not enjoy. I would hear some of the jokes and my family would be laughing, but I would be like, in my head, do they not realize that that's offensive? That was a really low-hanging, below-the-belt joke, and it seemed cheap just to get some like sitcom style laughs. And that's just not my cup of tea. I feel like because sitcoms often emulate the like nuclear family in America or a very heteronormative way of life, especially one that was set in the 90s. So I think just as a Gen Z queer person, I never loved the show. And I would never choose to watch it by myself. But I am someone who is a snowflake for sure. I claim that title proudly. I'm overly sensitive and I'm over analytical of everything. So I still do think Friends is funny in a lot of ways. And I completely understand why people watch it. And I think I kind of am someone who's in the middle on this situation. So I may be a good person to talk about it. So let's just talk about the most problematic things that Friends has ever did. And there's a pretty big list and you're going to be shook. So first of all, obviously, there was an all-white cast. And in the 90s, I guess I get it. But like, it was also the 90s, girl. It wasn't the 1950s. An all-white cast of an ensemble of six characters. Not one of them is queer. Not one of them is even a POC. I feel like POC sounds too close to POS. Like, every time I say POC, I'm like, why do I just feel like I said piece of shit? No, there was not... that it stands for person of color. There was not one person of color at all. That I think was just a major missed opportunity to me. And I can't believe even 20 years ago, they looked past having one person of color be a main cast member. Insane. Especially if the show is called Friends. Like, can white people only be friends with white people? I don't know. One of the creators of the show said that she actually felt so guilty and embarrassed over the lack of diversity on Friends, looking back at the show 20 years later, that she actually donated $4 million to a program that would support a distinguished scholar with a concentration in the study of peoples and cultures of Africa and the African diaspora. Maybe I'm saying that word wrong, but it seems like the guilt was definitely eating her alive and she knew how bad that looks. But I love the taking of responsibility, the seemingly sincere sense of change. And we stan her. We stan the creator of Friends. We love you. But yeah, that definitely went right over your head when it came to the casting. The second extremely problematic thing on Friends that really pisses me off as a queer person is that there was just a lot of homophobia on the show. Every time one of the men on the show would do something like be emotional or hang out with a woman in a platonic way or hang out with men too close to each other or something, they would always ask each other if they're gay or question their sexuality, but not just in a way that's like, are you gay? It's like, oh my God, are you gay? As if they're the imposter from Among Us, or as if they had a TNT bomb strapped to their waist and they're going to explode. They'd be like, are you gay? And run away from them as if being gay is contagious or something. Also, there was a pair of lesbians on the show, and anytime the word lesbian, or they would always call the lesbians, quote, lesbian life partners, anytime they would say those words, even just the word lesbian, the laugh track would go off. And not in like a satirical way, like Jennifer Aniston said, in a serious way. They were just laughing at the lesbians, and them being there was a shtick and a punchline. But the thing that pissed me off the most is that when Ross had a son on the show, anytime his son would not do something masculine, he would accuse his like 4-year-old son of being gay. And there was an episode where his son was playing with a Barbie instead of a G.I. Joe or a dinosaur or a race car or something. And he was so mad, and he started to accuse his ex-wife, who turned out to be a lesbian, of trying to push her queerness onto the son and make the son gay. He would say things like, why is my boy playing with a Barbie? And get all accusatory in his ex-wife lesbian's face. And that is not a funny joke. That is deep-rooted homophobia. So, of course, like Jennifer Aniston said, they're not making fun of bigots. Ross's character was being the bigot, and that is so fucked up. Something else Ross did in the show was literally try to have sex with his cousin, his first cousin. Wait, what's the quote from Mean Girls? When Karen thought her cousin was hot, she was like, yeah, but that's my first cousin. You have your cousins, and then you have your first cousins. I actually used to think that unironically. I'm not even kidding. I always used to think that my cousins were my cousins, and then anything distant was my first or second cousins. I was so dumb back then. I swear to God. Maybe I would have accidentally hooked up with my first cousin. Thank God I learned. But yeah, he literally tried to hook up with his cousin. And when one of the other characters asked him why the hell he was trying to hook up with his cousin, he said, quote, because I haven't had sex in a long time and she's hot. Girl, what the fuck was this show? Like, this is the kind of like normative, absolutely deranged sense of humor that straight white people had in the 1990s. And this show definitely is a little problematic. Something else wild is that Chandler's dad on the show was actually a transgender woman. Like, that was a plot line in the show. At first glance, that sounds really cool. Oh my God, they're giving representation. They're giving awareness. How amazing. But it kind of just seems like a built-in punchline for the show. Because often when the father was on screen, Chandler would treat his dad as if she was an embarrassment. And he would always say that her dad's lifestyle choices has led the family to be so embarrassed of her and like she tarnished the family name. And Chandler would often mislabel his dad as a drag queen, rather a transgender woman. Clearly, we don't love that. And I'm sure half of America who wants to ban drag queens would think it's hilarious. But that's maybe why television programs like Friends shouldn't run anymore. I will give them points, though, for bringing awareness to transgender people in general and even giving them time on the show. I guess that's something. Another crazy part of the show is that they would have major problems with consent with women. Like, oh, and with men, like the other way around. In one episode, Rachel hurt her ribs before a fancy event, so she asked Ross to help her get ready. She was about to change into her dress and asked Ross to turn around because she doesn't want him to see her naked. But when she takes off the dress, Ross doesn't turn around. He just looks at her naked without her consent. And then the laugh track plays. Like, what the fuck? What the hell? If that aired in a show today, that'd be taken off the air immediately, canceled, blocked, goodbye. Not in 2023, bitch. Also, at one point, a physical therapist inappropriately grabbed Phoebe's ass and like made a move on her and was feeling her up when Phoebe was clearly not into it. And then all she said afterwards was that he made a move on me that I didn't like, and then the show moved on. But in reality, he fully sexually assaulted her. Completely. Now, is that what we would want women seeing today and seeing how they should react to situations like that? I don't think so. Something else is how they would objectify women in the show. During all the episodes of Friends, whenever the male characters were trying to trick women into sleeping with them, they would refer to the women as objects or basically just inanimate objects that they were trying to have sex with that night. And then they would kick them out in the morning, not remember their names, not treat them as a human. Joey, in multiple episodes, literally calls women, quote, objects. And then all the men watching the show were like, I'm such a Joey. I'm exactly like Joey. I'm such a Joey. Taking a BuzzFeed quiz for which Friends character are you, it pops up that you're a Joey. And it's like, you like to objectify women, sexually assault them, and be an asshole. You're a Joey. They would be like, yeah, fuck yeah. I'm not gay. Something else that is so insane, but such a perfect reflection of society, is this whole storyline of Monica, the character that Courtney Cox plays. She has this storyline where she used to be fat before the present time of the show. So they would have flashbacks where she was fat Monica. And that's what she would be referred to in her fat state, as if her only important defining characteristic was the fact that she was heavier and had some weight on her. She was no longer human. She was just a fat. That's it. Delete it, fat, as Demi Lovato would say. They would just treat fat Monica as someone who was not worthy of sympathy, respect, to be taken seriously until she lost weight. Then we know her as the Monica we see in the show that isn't equal to them, a regular person, and someone who is worthy. But when she was fat Monica, they would just see her as lazy, dumb, and a joke unworthy of respect. And they would make all the typical fat jokes about how much she eats, or I bet you want this food, don't you? And you like going out to restaurants and ordering the whole menu. You can't sit there. You need more space, blah, 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 blah. Like all the typical jokes that if you're fat, you hear all the time by people who think that it's not serious, but it's a really serious, horrible thing to say to someone who's overweight. Like that was genuinely problematic. And I think me watching the show back, why I don't really like Friends is because I grew up fat. And as I said, I'm queer and Gen Z and everything, but I also grew up fat. And anytime I would see that segment, it would just trigger me so much because that's exactly how fat people were treated. Like they weren't satirically making fun of Fat Monica. Their characters were really making fun of Fat Monica. And the producers wanted to insert the laugh track to then encourage the audience at a certain time to laugh at her for being fat. And I love plus size people. I would not be scared to be plus size again. But anyone who grew up plus size or is plus size understands how traumatizing it could be to be treated that way by society, and why seeing that reflected on a TV show could really drive you nuts and make you want to just bash the TV in. It's very traumatizing for sure, enough to make me go insane. And if you know, you know. So I'm actually glad this discussion was brought up, because there's a lot of things with the show Friends that pisses me off and makes me never want to watch it. And I'm glad that I'm not alone in that thought process, and that Gen Z goes out of their way to be more sensitive. And not even sensitive is the word, just respectful and careful to not hurt anyone, I guess. So I guess the question I can now answer is, should we ban Friends? Should we never watch Friends again? Should it be taken off of streaming platforms and hashtag canceled? No. Even me, as someone who does not like Friends and really doesn't like a lot of the jokes on there and can't really stomach it, even I don't think we should cancel Friends. Even I will watch Friends sometimes and laugh at the screen sometimes. I think Friends was written by an all-white, straight, skinny, cis perspective because all the characters were that and everyone writing the show was that. So therefore, the characters will be ignorant a lot. And that's why the jokes were as such. But do you know why the characters were written to be so ignorant? Because that's what the audience was like at that time. They were writing for the audience. That's what they wanted because that's what they thought would sell. That's what they thought would get views and what was appealing to society to get the viewers to make more money. Is it Friends' fault? No, it's not Friends' fault. They were just an exact reflection of the time. It is not the show's fault at all. We should not hate the writers. We should not hate the actors. We all love them still. I think we should all still watch Friends if you like Friends. I'll even watch it sometimes. And I think we should appreciate Friends for what it is. And we can still laugh at it. And we can just laugh at the jokes in almost a satirical way now looking back, because of how opposite it is now. Like sometimes when I watch old things like Mean Girls or Clueless, they say the R word in it. And I just start laughing because, oh my God, you can't say that today. And they just said it with their chest in this movie. And it's so absurd and crazy that they would say that. And that would make me laugh. So I think that's how we can watch Friends. We can, when they do make jokes that you don't like, you can maybe just laugh at the absurdity. But there's 95% jokes that you will like and that we can all think are funny. And there's a lot of timeless comedy on that show, even though it was so problematic. And most of all, we can look back at Friends and appreciate how far we've come. Like, isn't that amazing? We can see how those people who were living normally in the 90s would not necessarily fit into society today because people have grown for the best. And we can appreciate that. And for that, Friends, I thank you. So yes, Friends is problematic, but it's not evil. And if it was on today, it would reflect today's society because that's just how television works. So I'm sorry that we have ruined yet another thing for you, Jen Aniston. I will go out of my way to make sure we never ruin anything for Jennifer Aniston ever again, because she, as a white, straight, privileged lady, she's been through enough. And we need to stop ruining things for Jennifer Aniston. But I think what we can really learn from this is that the fact that people are more, quote, sensitive today, and the fact that all the jokes on Friends wouldn't fly, doesn't mean comedy today has to be hard. Comedy is still alive and well. And Jennifer Aniston was like, everyone needs comedy. Everyone needs to laugh. Blah, 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 blah. Where's your manager? We are smart enough as individuals and creative enough as individuals that we can come up with extremely clever, witty, and creative material to make a crowd laugh. Any sort of comedy mocking a marginalized group to me is low-hanging, cheap, and should be left in the past for the untalented comedy writers that couldn't make a crowd laugh to save their fucking life. They're not telling any knee slappers. They're not making you laugh with your gut or making you cry laughing. They're just spoon-feeding you these low-hanging, lame jokes. And it's not really hard to not be canceled today in comedy. Just don't be an idiot. Or even if you're making jokes in like your friend group, you can still make people laugh while respecting everyone in the room. And I think that's what we can learn. Just don't be insane with the things that you say. Just be generally aware. That's it. Have common sense. That's all people are asking of anyone. It's not a tall order. All you have to do is not be racist, sexist, or homophobic. It's really not that much to ask. And if you're a good comedian and you're naturally funny, you'll make it work. And if you can't make it work, then, sweetie, don't worry about it. Just hope you're attractive because comedy isn't your thing.
Excuse me, but I might drink a little more of my sugar tonight. I might take you home with me.
Speaking of someone who's just reduced to their weight and given a name based on how much they weigh, let's talk about Fat Amy. So, trigger warning for anyone who grew up fat, is fat, or plans on being fat, you may be triggered. So, Rebel Wilson has really gone through one of the biggest transformations of any celebrity we know after making her superstar debut in Pitch Perfect and Bridesmaids. She was like this comforting, comedic relief on-screen best friend that was typecast as the hilarious plus-side sidekick who we could always rely on to make us laugh. And that sounds like a great gig, right? A great job. We would all want to do that. We get to be rich, famous, make people laugh, and get to eat whatever you want, and you don't have to stab yourself in the stomach with your Ozempic every week. That sounds amazing. But she talked about a lot of downsides of being the typecast fat friend, or the DUF, the designated ugly fat friend, and how she was actually forced to stay plus-sized against her will when she truly didn't even want to. You guys, this is crazy. So before she played Fat Amy in Pitch Perfect, she was in another TV show when she was a kid or something. Actually, I forgot what character this was from. It may have even been a play, but she had another role where her character's name was literally Fat Mandy. Can you believe that? She was Fat Amy and Fat Mandy. That has to do something to someone's brain if they're constantly only given applause or praise if they are made to be degraded on film because of how much they weigh. She must be traumatized to some extent because I just think that is so wrong, casting people and giving them a character called Fat Amy or Fat Mandy, especially because, you know, people around that time when those programs were being made, they were still being super fat phobic, as people are today. Like, if the same people calling you Fat Amy as your name gonna make fun of you for being fat, that would just sting to always be referred to as your biggest insecurity and then your name, as if I was called Big Forehead Patty. I wouldn't like that. I would get extremely upset. There's actually multiple shows, well, Pitch Perfect included, where Fat Amy reveals her real name is Fat Patricia, and then the Debbie Ryan show, Insatiable, that show is all about fat trauma, and that's why I love it. But her character is named Fatty Patty. So I feel like there's multiple, like is everyone on Scream with some variation of the name Patty just supposed to be fat, like Patricia or Patty? I don't know. But I've just noticed that, and it kind of irks me. It's like why the name Patty in all these situations? Is that the type of roles I should be going for in Hollywood? Let me know. But she was actually talking about how she was not allowed to lose more than 10 pounds to be in Pitch Perfect. Isn't that crazy? She said, I couldn't lose a massive amount of weight because it was in the contracts for that movie. You can't lose. I think I was not allowed to lose more than 10 pounds or gain more than 10 pounds. You have to kind of stay at the same weight. It's in your contract. That's so fucked up. That's some sort of like human right violation, I think. She even wanted to lose weight. She told them for a minute there she wanted to lose weight while doing the three Pitch Perfect movies. The Pitch Perfect trilogy. She said, I was thinking for a while that I would like to get healthier. I was stereotyped in playing that fat, funny friend, which is so hard because I love those roles. I love doing those roles and I love those characters. But then I did want to do more things. But it felt like being the bigger girl, you're just more pigeon-held. I mean, I agree with her. I don't really like the trope of the fat, funny friend. Why can't the fat friend be the main character? The one that's taken seriously and given respect and seen as the relatable one. Do you know what I'm saying? So I do agree with her that she probably would be pigeon-held if she was still plus size, but I wish she just wouldn't be. So I'd feel so frustrated for her. Her fertility doctor even told her to lose weight because it was affecting her ability to get pregnant. She said that it was affecting her love life too, because she was wanting to make some sort of change at some point, but she wasn't allowed to, and that was making her almost anxious in her own body. And she said that she would just find herself eating chocolate alone at night. And that is very sad, but also very relatable. See, that's why she should play the relatable characters, because we love that. But yeah, that doesn't sound very body positive to me. As I said earlier this episode, body positivity is doing whatever you want with your body to make yourself feel good and happy and healthy. And if that's being plus sized and looking voluptuous and beautiful, of course do that. I love that and support that. But if you want to lose weight, sure, go ahead and do that too. Hollywood is really fucked up for that. But the sad thing is that it works. She definitely got a lot of more roles when she was that fat Amy type. Now, maybe I should be more specific to you guys about how I used to be plus sized. I was plus sized ever since I was probably 7 to 13. And then I lost weight. But your brain does a lot of developing and you kind of come into consciousness when you're from the ages of 7 to 13. So you can imagine how traumatizing that was. And then I was fat again from probably the time I was like 17 to like 20. So very recently, I'm just 22 now. I was almost over 200 pounds. And while I don't necessarily hate myself when I am in a fatter state, I don't like how people treat me. And at that moment in my life, I just wanted to get into weightlifting and everything like that. So I wasn't running from weight at all or making it seem like a bad thing. That just was not my vibe at the time anymore, I guess. And one of the most crazy things about Rebel Wilson's journey is that she said, because of multiple factors, including her insecurity from her weight and because of how serious she was about her career and dedicated to her craft, that she was such a late bloomer that she didn't date until she was 35. Can you believe it? She did not go on her first date, have her first real kiss, anything like that until she was 35 years old. Isn't that so fucking crazy? One, because she was so focused on her career and trying so hard to make it. Two, because she said she was a bit insecure. I bet a part of it had to do with being gay too, because she wasn't maybe too interested in guys. And so she never really felt the urge to go out and date a guy. And she may not have felt like dating a woman was an option for her. So I bet you that is a part of the reason she prolonged her blooming. But yeah, she didn't date until she was 30 fucking five. And me and Rebel Wilson, I'm realizing, have so much in common. I was such a late bloomer. I grew up plus size. I didn't date anyone until I was 20. And I guess I consider that a late bloomer because everyone's in high school. Like, I had my first kiss. We kissed behind the stairwell. We held hands in the hallway. We went to a party this weekend and made out, blah, blah, blah. Everyone was having those moments, but I was not. And I guess it could have gotten to my head, but actually a lot of my friends were late bloomers as well. So I'm so thankful for them that we kind of had our own little tribe to normalize it for ourselves and not pressure each other to date people when we weren't ready to. So I'm so thankful for all my friends in that case. Because when I finally did bloom when I was 20, I was so ready and it was so the perfect timing. And if I did it any year earlier, it would have so not been. So I'm glad I didn't give into the pressure of feeling embarrassed to be a late bloomer. And I don't think anyone should, even if you're 35 and you haven't kissed anyone yet. Who cares? If that's when you're ready and you want to get into a relationship, perfect. Like, bloom when you're ready, girl. And I think, like, being in a relationship isn't the most important thing in life. Like Rebel said, she had very clear goals and wanted a big life for herself, and she became a massive star. And she wouldn't have been able to achieve such great stardom if she was off hooking up with mediocre men with receding hairlines all the time. So I think that's the best for her, that she did not start dating until she was 35. Now she has an amazing lesbian lover, and they are rendezvousing and making giant leaps for lesbian kind on their Instagram. So yeah. Yeah, I was really a late bloomer though in so many ways. I feel like some people's bodies just develop almost at a later time, because I didn't even get acne until I was 20. Most people have their breakouts when they're 15, blah, blah, blah. But me, I was growing like 4 inches when I was 20. I was getting all this acne. I think truly I was just such a late bloomer. And I'm almost happy that I was, because if I was blooming and being all confused and hormonal and acne ridden when I was 15, I don't think I would have lasted. I think that would have gone really bad for everyone. God really had my back. He said, patience is a virtue in that one. So no regrets in that aspect. And now Rebel has lost weight, almost 100 pounds. I believe she looks amazing. She looks happy. She looks comfortable in herself. And the fact that all of this has come to fruition for her, I feel like at the perfect time, being 35, she is getting more movie roles, even though she's skinny. She was in that one movie on Netflix, the comedy about getting a concussion when you're a senior in high school, then waking up from the concussion when you're 40, then going back to high school. And she was like the main character, relatable girl. And it was so fun and inspiring to see. And I'm so happy that she's getting this moment right now, having all of these dreams come true that she wasn't allowed to for so long. So what can we learn from Rebel Wilson? I think we can learn that being a late bloomer works out. And if you're listening to this and you're a teenager in your 20s, in your 30s, and you don't feel ready to bloom in a certain way, don't feel pressured if you truly know it's just not the time. If you feel like you're shy and you're insecure, but you also have some interest in blooming, then I would say start opening yourself up to that world. But if for some reason you just know now's not your time, then don't. And don't let people make you feel like you have to. I think you should wait for a person who feels right and gives you everything you need and you want, and you should bloom for them. You should bloom for them. But if you're just getting with anyone because you want to feel like you've bloomed and you don't want to be a late bloomer, then maybe you'll miss the right person because you'll be with someone else. So just do it at the right time for you. And I think it's better to bloom slowly than to rush the process and kill the flower. If you like overwater a flower and overexpose it to sunlight, it could die. So don't rush the process. Let your flower bloom at the right time, and you'll know when that is. There's no due date for your first introduction to the dating scene, because the soul knows no deadlines. Okay. So if you want to go focus on your career, do that. Like I am right now. But I do want a boyfriend desperately. Thank y'all for tuning into Pop Culture University today. I love y'all and appreciate y'all deeply, each and every one of you. And now is the time of the class where we are going to hand out superlatives. We are going to give someone an award based on their personality, and they are the most of that. They are the most this or that, and we are giving a superlative for that. So the superlatives that we're going to hand out are secret villain superlative, unproblematic pageant queen superlative, messy bitch that lives for the drama superlative, and most likely to be canceled next superlative. So let's start with the secret villain superlative. That is going out to none other than Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis. They're the secret villains. They think they're doing something good for their children, but all they're doing is taking away their future happiness, their future bliss, and their inalienable right to become a Nepo baby that they deserve to become. How else are they going to drive around in a Lamborghini really slow all throughout Hollywood so everyone can see their face and they can feel better than everyone else? How are they going to do that if you're not going to fork over your money when you die? Cough it over, bitch. Make your kids happy. The next superlative is unproblematic pageant queen superlative, and that's going to Rebel Wilson. She is the unproblematic pageant queen of the week, not doing anything to offend us, but actually doing something to inspire us. She is the rich person representing the poor people this week, and we could not be more inspired by her life story and how brave she is for being a lesbian of Instagram. So thank you, Rebel Wilson. Unproblematic pageant queen. Next award is the messy bitch that lives for the drama. We're going to give this award to Doja Cat. She's the messy bitch that lives for the drama. She said, I don't give a fuck if you don't like that I am getting my titties cut open and some tissue taken out, fat taken out of my thighs. You can just live with it. And I'm going to tease the fuck out of you on social media and make you feel bad that you can't get these procedures that you want done. And I'm going to tell you that I'm getting my clit bedazzled. She lives for the drama, but she's also just doing whatever she wants and coming for anyone who tries to bully her. She has time today because she's in recovery, so she will clap back. She is a messy bitch who lives for the drama, and her Twitter makes that very clear. Last superlative, maybe the worst one to get, is most likely to be canceled next superlative. And we're going to hand that out to Jen Aniston. Jennifer Aniston, Gen Z is not one to be fucked with. We will host a town hall meeting about you on Twitter and get that hashtag Jen Aniston is over party trend going real quick. If you say Gen Z ruined one more thing, and I will be the person to lead that. We do love Jen Aniston, but I don't know. She gets in these interviews and the PR person falls asleep. Her publicist passes out because they don't help her at all. She's constantly saying things that could get her canceled in interviews, and she needs help. I should be her PR person. So, Jen, you win the superlative for most likely to be canceled next. Not saying she will be, but it's likely out of everyone we spoke about today. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you have an amazing weekend. My plans are really nothing exciting because I literally have none. So if someone wants to, like, go get ice cream or frolic through flowers with me or something, like, we can totally do that. But seriously, I hope you guys have an amazing weekend. Stay safe. Make good choices. Don't do anything I wouldn't do, which is basically everything. So I guess do whatever you want. And I will see y'all Tuesday. Thank you for tuning in. Screenshot yourself listening to this. Post it to your Instagram story. We can hit it up in the DMs. But yeah, like podcast, 5 stars, subscribe. Hit up my Snapchat show, Unfiltered Pop. Would help me so much. Love that show. It's my own show, so I love it. And review the podcast, blah, 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 all that fun shit. But until Tuesday, class is dismissed. Love you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.